Yeah.
Good day, cannabis makers. My name is Øystein, and we are here today again with another episode of the Cannabis Maker. I have with me Liam.
Hey guys, Liam here, and on today's episode of the Cannabis Maker podcast, we're joined by Forzana, working on our organization Can Do in the UK. With patient experience and safety, she's one of the UK's longest continuing prescribed patients. We're also joined by Corey from BC in Canada. He is the Chief Cannabis Consultant at Resonate Cannabis and the founder at We Are Green Inc., working on large-scale cannabis cultivation. We've got Shane from Maven Genetics in LA, California, who's got over 17 years in the cannabis industry, and Jared from Lost Coast Wellness Center in California. Before we get started on today's session of the Cannabis Maker podcast, we're going to take a quick second to give a shout out to our sponsors. Today's episode is self-sponsored by Nordic Herb Zone. Nordic Herb Zone is Norway's first cannabis and hemp brand and works with the best medical cannabis doctors, pharmacists, and patients to provide more information and access to medical cannabis patients in Norway and Europe. If you're interested in a medical cannabis prescription and want to find out more, head to nordicherbzone.com. 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 We're going to start off the session here with Forzana. How are you doing now, Forzana?
Thank you, Liam and David, for hosting the podcast. My name's Forzana. I'm the longest continuing prescribed patient in the UK, which has led me to actually open and launch a patient organisation called Can Do, which is basically to champion education, research and development, and to promote access for patients in the interim while we sort out whether we're going to have it on our central system called the NHS, or if we're going to have to continue having it in a private clinic. So for me, I was really ill. I have a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and there is no cure. So I have to have supportive treatments. At one stage, they actually stopped working, and cannabis was my only option. So thankfully, when it became legal, I could get access to it, and it actually changed my life. It reduced my symptoms. It allowed me to reduce the amount of medicines that I took, and it allowed me to be able to have hope for the future and not just think about basically and having an illness with no cure. So that means that you're basically going to deteriorate, where at the minute I can have like a healthy baseline. So I'm really happy about that. And I just want to be able to help the patients that come after me to be able to have better access than I did, not have to go through some of the stumbling blocks that I had to, and actually have an easier life and just enjoy their life and improve the quality.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that, Forzana. I think it's, what you're doing is absolutely brave. And I think to see somebody doing these first steps and pushing in that direction right now in the UK is, yeah, it's refreshing to hear. It's refreshing to see. And I think when a lot of people at this moment are perhaps jumping into the industry and thinking, oh, shit, where can I, you know, make the most money on a product? I think the people in this industry that are doing it for the right reasons, that are there to help people and to really make a difference and clear up all the bullshit that we've had to deal with over the past 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, almost 100 years. And I'm speaking for others that we've spoken to, you know, to be able to go forward and help people and do it on this path is definitely admirable. And yeah, kudos to you, really.
And so some tips for the patient. So I can give like the UK patients some tips. And this technically can be used across like Europe because our markets sort of model each other. So in the UK, I think the first thing is to just let people know that you can access legal cannabis. This has been happening since 2018. I also would like another little tip is to understand the prices have come down now. So we've worked really hard to reduce those. So it may not be as affordable for everyone, but it's now more affordable for more people and more patient populations. And the work is not finished. We are trying to get this so cost is not a reason why patients and people cannot access this powerhouse of a plant. Third tip, I would say, consult your doctor so you can have a curated treatment plan. We need more patients to be able to feel comfortable. And this is when we touched earlier on the stigma. This is one of the things that is huge at the moment everywhere. Trying to understand that this is not a drug that people use to get high. This is now a medicine. Well, it's always been a medicine, but we have to remove that stigma and bias. And, you know, we're having a lot of, we're doing a lot of good work in that, but there's still a lot of work to do. But we have to not lose hope. because we're making inroads on this journey. And I think, you know, having a podcast like this and allowing us to actually share what's actually going on and to know that there is hope and things are changing for the better. So medical cannabis will become more accessible for everyone.
You've got a fair point, and it really comes down to the access, like you said. We've really got a lot of people in a lot of situations who, yeah, they have to go down the traditional path, the traditional route of trying out a lot of different medicines. And a lot of the time, you know, most people don't have the time, the money, and yeah, they look for the education, really, which is what we're spreading as well. And I've seen you doing a big push as well. Give us just a little bit of a heads up where we can find you, where people can get in touch if they're a patient in the UK, where they can reach you at.
A website called candocanna.com. You can also reach me at Twitter personally on Patients First CD. You can also catch me here. So I'm here quite a lot, just trying to like spread awareness, remove some of the bias and the stigma. Because one of the things I like to do is just let everybody know that just because we medicate with medical cannabis, we don't grow horns, we don't start acting strange, like we're just the same people. And so I think that's one of the good ways to be able to show people that it's actually okay, nothing bad is actually going to happen to you. And also it's very safe to be used. We have a lot of research and data now also.
Yeah, I think that's one thing we've been trying to push as well. Just get a couple of people more aware of the fact we hear the phrase, we need more research, echoed a lot. But I'm actually also one of those strong supporters of the existing research that we have that has been carried out for the past 20 years, and that we just maybe need to open our eyes to more as this goes on, as the movement continues. I'm saying with legalization and also more access in medical markets, we are seeing more research, we're seeing people delve in. And we're also starting to get a lot more information on cannabinoid-specific benefits and therapeutic interactions. I think we're definitely getting to a higher level of education, to pardon the pun, and, you know, really starting to see what we can access. I know David earlier was talking about, oh, now he's got his CBD, but then you can also be supplementing with CBN or CBC or CBDV or THCV, and we've got all these kind of things to start educating people about and kind of moving on, you know, because I think for Zana, you mentioned earlier as well, stuff like suppositories for cancer patients who are, you know, they're not looking to get high, they're just looking to get the therapeutic benefits of THC. We're really just seeing more of a development and spread across these different areas where we can be applying cannabis and also using it therapeutically. Love to move it on to Corey maybe at this point, who probably have a pretty good perspective on that, being in Canada at the moment, working with some big grows and making stuff happen over at Resonate. How's it going, Corey?
Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to join in the conversation. And thank you, everybody, for joining earlier at the Delta Cultural Exchange. It's definitely eye-opening to see kind of what's happening over here in Canada. You know, we're pretty fortunate in a lot of ways. Some ways we aren't. But as a quick introduction, I'm the managing director of Resonate Cannabis Incorporated here in Canada. I'm also a co-founder and Canadian partner with a company called We Are Green Incorporated. Resonate Cannabis is focused on, you know, working with these producers and getting better product to market. Particularly, I like to help a smaller producer here in Canada. I'm working on a few facilities in the Michigan market as well. Really excited to enter a new market, starting from the ground up. You know, building a genetic library where we're able to grow both recreational and medicinal cultivars there. And that's how I truly intend to do it, you know, try and have a difference if we can out there and, you know, really produce some products for people that are needing it. It's the one, you know, biggest thing that I kind of get frustrated with here in Canada is that we don't have the appropriate products for people here in the recreational market and certainly not in the medical market. Our medical market has been under attack, and the quality of the products are definitely considerably lower, I believe, than what it was prior to legalization. So I'm excited to work on projects with folks, you know, across the pond and also in North America, South America, wherever the case may be, to just kind of help people out and make sure that the same mistakes aren't made and just improve access for everybody. I'm originally a medical patient as well. So the cannabis plant means a lot to me. It's an extremely personal journey for me, and I just want to, you know, encourage everybody through their struggles and help you guys get through it. I really feel your pain when you share some of these stories. So there's no reason for us to do it alone. I'm here to be a teammate with everybody and do my best to help us get into a position where, you know, people are not being imprisoned or being, you know, stigmatized because of the use of cannabis. It's just absolutely unacceptable in my eyes. Thanks again for having me, Liam and David. I really appreciate the opportunity to share in this forum with everybody today.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, Corey. I really appreciate that little breakdown on what's going on and what you're doing. And I got to touch on one thing you said when you commented on, you know, the mistakes that are being made in the markets and that you're hoping to not see this in other markets. Just so we can all, and for the people in the audience as well, what do you think are the big mistakes that Canada has really made, and how do you see us over in Europe avoiding these?
Just be afraid of the big behemoths. You know, they might have the ability with capital to, you know, have some leverage in markets and, you know, be pre-placed in a lot of markets across Canada and in Europe. But, you know, it's really frustrating going to the store and purchasing products that are just subpar. You know, nobody wants to buy flower that has like a ring of powder inside of the jar around it. It's just, no, there's too much money being spent for that to happen. So I feel that there's been a giant disconnect here in Canada between the traditional market, the legacy market, black market, whatever the terminology may be, and the legal market. The legal market was extremely hesitant to bring on legacy folks in the beginning, and that put a very sour taste in a lot of us. So it's been a difficult process to try and reconcile with that. And that's why I choose to work with smaller producers at this point in time. My mantra right now is to take back our market. You know, yeah, it's an emotional subject, but without getting too crazy into it, like, we've done a lot of fighting for that. And there's no reason at all why these big suits and these corporations should be taken. They shouldn't be taken it away from us. There's been a lot of knowledge that's been developed through these people who have been through the decades of persecution. And we just need to let it go and, you know, bring them to the table, their rightful place at the table, and put out some really nice medicine, some really nice cannabis products, so that we can all just be okay with, you know, taking these things too. It's all about the end user. I don't want products that are, you know, might have a questionable input or a questionable IPM practice put to them. It's just not fair.
Hey, Corey. Thanks for sharing. My name is Øystein. I'm the founder of Nordic Herb Zone, also the partner of Liam here. I have a small input, the same thing we are seeing in the European market is the stability, or we have in Amsterdam or from the Netherlands, we have been lucky to have a more stable medical cannabis in its form of flowers. Bedrocan has been really, really good with that, but it's only Bedrocan that has been able to over time deliver stable cannabis. So every time we're getting our cannabis, if it's 1 month or the other month, the THC and the CBD level is not moving a lot. So with just the Netherlands, we have a lot of stable medicine, but what we are missing here, after my opinion, is more the variations in terpenes and different cannabinoids and terpene variations.
The way the legalization system was set up here is that you'll find the same cultivars in the same provinces or states pretty much across the board. There's not a lot of variety that's happening up here in Canada. So that's kind of one of the big issues. I know that's slowly starting to open up. The nursery game, you know, I know somebody who finally was able to complete their declaration of bringing in their different strains or cultivars to their facility as a nursery. So, you know, there is a small window that you can bring in a one-time only declaration from the black market or the traditional market to bring these genetics, or for the medical growers to, you know, get them in and kind of promote some diversity. But right now, that's a big thing. And even if they do have, you know, some of these really nice cultivars with the name, it doesn't mean that the facilities are able to actually grow quality product either. And that's one of the other things, again, is, you know, you can have the fire, you can have the best cultivar on earth by name, but if you don't have the proper training on the floor, if you don't have the right mentality of the staff that are in these facilities, you know, not treating the plant like a unit, it's never going to turn out the same. And that's a huge, huge issue.
Oh, absolutely. We were both nodding our heads there and agreeing, because it's something that you say, well, you know, it's quite interesting you mentioned that as well. You got one chance to bring in that sort of certification on a strain. And if you're working with people as well on that large scale, that, you know, I don't feel like we've been able to see the passion. I mean, personally, when I've traveled to Humboldt and I've seen the stuff that the people are growing there, and just hearing people talk about what they're doing is a totally different vibe. And you hear the passion and you hear, you know, how much time they like to spend with it. And I feel like if you're maybe producing at such a scale that you're really looking at, you know, economies of scale, then it becomes really, really difficult to actually focus on that real high quality. But yeah, it's a fair point you mentioned. It's something that Oystein was saying as well. We're lucky to have over here in Europe that we have a little bit of stability, but it definitely needs to come more on the variety side. So I think it would be also a really interesting point in time when we're just talking about the variety side to also bring in Nicole and say, hey, how's it going?
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for this amazing podcast. Well, I'm talking from the German side. So I'm a cannabis entrepreneur, activist and educator. And like you had a very good point at the beginning that it's all about education. And I think in Germany, it's even beginning with the doctors. So we have like all these findings about the endocannabinoid system since the 80s, 1980. So many findings, so many studies. And it begins with the doctors over here. Although we are the second biggest importer of medical cannabis, they are not yet well educated on cannabis and the endocannabinoid system. And this starts in the universities where, you know, it's such a big part of our body, the endocannabinoid system, and they are not properly talking about it at the university when you're learning to become a doctor. And I think that's a main big point where it starts when it comes to medical cannabis and when it comes for a nation to learn and understand about cannabis.
You know, absolutely. That's one big part that we've seen. That's why we still have people that are traveling from places like Germany or Norway or Spain, France, all over Europe, you know, that have traveled to places like the Netherlands to really find this level of education and knowledge. And that being said, even the doctors that we have in the Netherlands, while they're some of the best in the game, this is really, it comes back to what Corey was saying about, you know, having a passion and a real interest for what you're doing. Because these are the doctors that very early on in their career made that decision and said, no, I'm going to focus on cannabis and natural healing and preventative healthcare, because I know that this is the path that is the best for my patients when I want to treat them, you know, and give them the best possible care. But I know as well from your side, you've said there's a lot of development in Germany at the moment. Corey, you probably know as well that a lot of medical cannabis from Canada is making its way to Germany and is on the shelves there. And I mean, we've seen prices range from, let's say, about 7-8 euros a gram to, yeah, up to crazy stuff like 25-26 euros a gram.
I hear that it's also not yet so easy to get a subscription. So it's mostly, you know, if you want to have it paid by, how do you say it in English, by insurance, then you have to, well, be a subscribed patient. And most of the times you don't get this kind of attest to get it financed by your insurance, so you have to pay like double the price as on the black market. So it's also a big issue. And what Corey was talking about before, I also heard that from Canada when I was talking to a guy over there. He told me that One big problem and what's keeping the black market up is that the quality from, you know, recreational cannabis isn't so good because they have to buy it all from one place and then it takes a long, long time until it gets on the shelf. So these are things that we really should look out to when it comes to, you know, medical cannabis and recreational cannabis and legalization, that we fight for something that it's not what only 10 producers, for example, where we have a long time until it gets into the shelf, but that we have many producers, small producers, guys who are doing this since all the years and who are in this with their heart, because we need a variety on this market and we need good quality products.
It's definitely coming back to what we said, the variety, the good quality. And I think, yeah, for Zana, we'll have a good take on this as well, probably a little bit of input, because variety and quality is something that I think in the UK, there's been some difficulties. And I know a lot of patients in the UK, especially following now the, let's just call it slight division, and having that different market and having those different steps in place, we might even see actually the development of a better medical cannabis market. And back to what Nika was saying as well on the access side and how to find this is still a difficult part, because cost-wise, you know, not everybody can afford this. And this is a very, very important point, because the insurance does not yet cover it. In the Netherlands, for example, medical cannabis isn't covered by your insurance either. And just going through that process in Germany as well, I've heard from patients that they have to have a lawyer, they have to go through this, almost taking their insurance company to court in order to win over a court case to then be insured for medical cannabis. And, you know, as a medical cannabis patient, to have to go through all of this when simply you're just trying to treat your condition is, it's frankly just beyond me. And this is really something that we're working towards. I think maybe for Zana as well, we'll have a little bit of info on access.
What we have been fighting for in the UK is a price reduction. So we've got that now. So it's £5 a gram. So that is huge at the minute. That's like a huge victory for like most patients. It's not, you know, we want it to be free, because most of our medicines are £14 and you get your monthly prescription. However, we've also had like an influx of about 5 new strains as well, or cultivars. However, my problem is, and a lot of the patients, is the quality of those cultivars. So we need to have them where they're not degrading by oxygen and light and heat, and they're not traveling for miles to get to us, they're not stored for, you know, extended periods of time. And we also need improved packaging. So there's so much to do from the licensed producer side, and I think that stems from them listening to us, the patient, and us telling them, or being able to amplify our voice so they can hear us when we say, you know, thank you for providing the sterile cannabis for us, but we actually need a variety of products, and we need products that with a variety of routes of administration. And we also need a variety of strain strengths as well, because we have a lot, we have a variety at like 20% or above. But when it comes down to like the 14, 13%, like more products that the new cannabis user could use, we're lacking in that area.
That would be just a quick question that I'd have for Nicole as well, that we're coming in here. You're saying as well that you're more involved on entrepreneurship side and business creating. And if you don't mind me asking, what have you got planned for the industry? Where are you really seeing the move?
Well, I'm working on sustainable products and sustainable products made from cannabis and consumer goods. Can't tell too much about that right now. But what I can say is that cannabis is the future when it comes to sustainability. So I, as an entrepreneur, see it, and I just have to think about new and sustainable and things of the future, for example, like packaging, for example, like reducing plastic, getting plastic, for example, completely out of the packaging side. And all these little things that I think big and old corporations aren't thinking about, but we have to, because from my side, I'm also doing it for a greener future. So I think we have a chance to build a very green and forward industry, but we have to get this chance. So as long as only the big players get their part, as it mostly is right now in Germany, things, cannabis cannot change the future. But when we
get more players in there, then we have really possibility to get a very, very green future out of this.
It's actually a super interesting point on the sustainability as well. I know hemp packaging has been a big topic of conversation that we were having in these groups the last couple of weeks. And definitely one interesting point that I have to make there, I'm sure Corey is aware of this as well, and for Zana, you'll know it as a patient, but all of the medical cannabis companies and, let's say, distributors and everything that's going on there, they love plastic, right? Everything is plastic composites. If it's coming in tubs, in boxes, in bags, everything is plastic. So I think definitely, Nick, what you're saying here is a big possibility and a big chance to actually start moving some stuff around. We've been looking at hemp packaging and having a bit more of a sustainable approach. But with such a big waste-generating industry, it's difficult. I don't know, Corey, maybe you'd have a bit of input there, but I'm not sure. You know, there's a lot of stuff that is in the way of packaging, especially in regulated marketplaces like child safety and all this sort of stuff.
And I wanted to make that differentiation as well, and thank you for bringing that up. As far as regulations are concerned, you know, a lot of these producers are all for being sustainable and making those moves forward. However, there's regulations that guide certain packaging guidelines. So that's one of the things that I've run into as well, is people have looked down these paths, but the federal regulations don't really allow for these viable options. So there are some LPs that are trying to get this done, or sorry, licensed producers. Licensed producers are the companies that are cultivating these products and usually processing them on a large scale and sending them out to market. So I know that the research has been done and they're trying to understand that, but it really needs a regulational change because, yes, the amount of packaging is absolutely bananas here in Canada. I've been sharing a picture with some folks, especially in the early days. There was no like ounce packages. So the biggest package that they had was 3.5 grams. So in order to buy an ounce, you were buying all these 3.5 gram packages to get up to an ounce. So it was just, it was ridiculous, you know, coming home with a brown paper bag just full of containers. So I know that sounds like a first world problem because I just said that, you know, you have a paper bag full of weed containers, and I can understand the privilege to access that on the recreational market, but it's also not limited to recreational medicinal products. Again, same packaging, same guidelines. So it's a definite problem up here in Canada for sure.
Got to chime in on that one and say as well, and draw a little bit that I think the legacy market, we'll call it that, or if you want to go for Amsterdam, Netherlands specifically, the gray side of that area. It's, I mean, having worked there myself, the amount of plastic baggies that I would hand out on a daily basis was just horrendous. You know, I would happily greet and smile every time that I would have a few customers who would come up with their glass jar. You know, I'd be like, fuck yeah, and I'd always give them a little bit of extra weed to make sure that they brought their glass jar the next time. Because, you know, having such a big waste generating industry is crazy. The bud spends maybe 30 seconds, a minute in there, and that's it, so... Yeah, it's definitely an interesting side of that industry for sure.
Should we move it over to Finn? Finn, what's you up to today?
How's it going?
Are you finally smoking again?
Not right now. But shortly earlier.
See, I heard you had a really, really, really hard 1 week off. But finally back on it, I hope. And high and happy again.
Man, yeah, that it kind of all comes back to what we've been talking about. I sort of had to take an involuntary tolerance break just to like circumstances, and it fucked me up pretty bad. Like, cannabis is something that I really have to use. And when I say cannabis, you know, a lot of people would just think THC, but when I say cannabis, I'm really talking about the whole plant. So, all the products that I use that are derived from cannabis, I really need consistent usage of them to see any benefit. And accessibility for me is one of the most important things to make sure that everyone can have and keep that consistency. Because even in the legal markets, we see that still isn't there yet. And medical patients are still trying to find their way through a bit of a minefield. Even more so when everyone is telling you it's legal and right. So, yeah, super interesting to hear this discussion and hear very interesting points.
We also are bouncing around on different strains after different strains when we don't have our medical or enough in our position, not enough money to keep buying medical cannabis every month or every week. The amount of cannabis we consume is a lot, and to then be able to have access to 700 grams of medical cannabis every month is not going to be possible for two people, and the amount of travel, because we have to travel as well, is making sure that we are not having the access we want to have to our medicine. But as I'm saying, we're bouncing around on different strains after different strains. It's nothing stable with it, but if you can at least find a supplier or a friend that has a better quality, or in our position, sun-grown weed instead of indoor, we see a huge difference in terpene levels. When we smoke something that comes from a called moldy cellar in Amsterdam, it's gonna get you high, but it's not gonna be comfortable because of all other things that will then be in the cannabis. And when we get a more bio form of sun-grown cannabis from down here in Spain, it's a much more relaxed feeling, and it has a totally another vibe to the actual highness of it. So we have to try to find some stability in the consumption, but since we are on the black market, it's hard.
Yeah, I think we're still seeing, we mentioned it earlier as well, Finn and Dave as well, you know, people are still seeing a huge reliance on the legacy side, but I do think that we have to step in that direction where Forzana is working on patient access, where Nicole is working on actually bringing in some more, let's say, variety and choice to this side of the industry. And I also just saw that Shane came in. Shane Ponto, sir, how are you doing today? Welcome to the Cannabis Maker Podcast.
David, how you guys doing? Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming in, sir. I really, really appreciate that. How are you doing today?
Everything's good. It's nice to kind of have a semi-day off. I mean, for those that are in the cannabis industry know that it doesn't ever really sleep, and there's never a dull moment. So I'm just trying to like chill out a little bit and getting ready for another solid week on Monday.
Nice, man. Well, then I've got to jump straight in and ask you about the solid week. You want to maybe give us a little bit of a breakdown on what you're making in the industry, what you've got going on, sir?
Yeah, so right now we're looking on expansion over state lines with the brand. You know, California, we're working aggressively on to cover relationships with the most professional companies that we could work with. We're always trying to be innovative and, you know, with our cross-pollination projects to create new genetics and strains that are not common in the cannabis industry, especially in retail. I think that's what makes brands really unique, you know, and having their own identity is you know, strains created, which is a huge thing these days. You know, we're just always staying busy, trying to create other brands underneath our distribution umbrella, and really focus on presenting quality that the industry deserves.
That's nice. What kind of products are you dealing with? Is it flowers, or is it other products in the industry?
Growers in Los Angeles for, you know, close to, you know, me personally about 17 years. My partners may have a little couple more years on me, but I'm sorry, what was the question again?
What kind of products or what kind of services are you providing in the industry? What brands are in there?
Got it. So, you know, we've been growers. That's what I was trying to get at. We've been growers for a long time. And we mainly grow flower, and then from the flower, you know, we package all of our own eighths, and then we use the smaller buds for manufacturing into our pre-roll line. We have a couple of different types of pre-rolls, one's with full gram, and then we have a 2.5 gram five pack. They're 5.5 gram pre-rolls. We just are about to launch our live resin carts. We've got another. We're just always being innovative, you know. Like we just basically grow all of our own flower. We manufacture all of our own concentrates, and we manufacture all the distillate for the vape pen lines.
Nice one, nice one. I don't know. We in Nordic Herbstone, we launched our own hemp paper line for in 2019. I've been off raw. Raw was my favorite for many, many years. But when I found out that not necessarily all the organic hemp paper that are on the market contains just organic hemp, I wanted to try to make my own. And we have now organic hemp paper that is only organic hemp paper. And the experience and the taste coming with it, it's awesome. So if you want a sample pack of cones or papers to try out, we will gladly send over some.
Feel free to DM me. My Instagram is on there as well as the company Instagram. You could check that out. Sometimes we've tried the palm leaves and a couple other things, but we're always open to do more R&D to make sure that we select the best products that parallel with our brand. So I'd love to try the hemp that you have.
Then for all the listeners as well, where on Instagram or other social media can people find you?
I have a LinkedIn, but I don't know. I get so consumed with my everyday work, I try not to take on more social media than need be. Usually Instagram, I keep it pretty mellow on. I don't really try to look for the large following, and I'm pretty active with my direct messages.
Thank you, Shane, for sharing. We will absolutely keep in touch and get over a sample package of some hemp papers.
Thank you so much.
Nice one. Yeah, thanks, Shane. Thanks for sharing that. It's Liam here again. We were touching on some cool things that, you know, we have yet to see over here in Europe kind of develop and really come about. When you say you've been growing in the industry and doing what you're doing for just over 17 years now, you know, there's people over here in Europe that, you know, they've maybe been growing for about a year or two, really at that high level, at that high scale, and seeing what's happening in the industry. It's quite a select bunch. And the European growers, as far as I've experienced, you know, they're a lot less forthcoming and a lot less opening up about their craft, maybe about what they've been doing, how long they've been involved. But of course, it is down to the, you know, the legality and the structure of the market here in Europe, how we're seeing this progress, because there are countries that in a legacy market supply a medical market in one country, or maybe there's an illicit supply in another country that supplies a very legitimate market in another country, not to mention any certain places. But there's that, you know, this is how the systems are working at the moment. But I think it's great to hear from somebody who's been in the industry for that long. If I could maybe ask you a question, and you know, as a kind of a tip as well for listeners and people who've heard what you've got going on, what are the mistakes that you've seen made in your industry over the years, and how do you think we can avoid them over here in Europe?
So, you know, there's so many mistakes that we make that are actually some of the best learning lessons, but to try to avoid as many bad learning lessons, I guess, I would really try to focus on your outlet as cultivators, because there is a freshness aspect to cannabis, and make sure you package it correctly, make sure you cure it correctly before it hits market. Also make sure that you have your outlets, because nobody likes old flower. So you could be the biggest grower in the world and have tons of product, but at the end of the day, where are you going to move it to? So you always really got to build up your distribution portfolio to make sure that the product you're producing has a home. That would be like the first thing. Secondary, I would just really pay attention to the quality that your company is trying to put out, and make sure that you're not just pumping out abundance of cannabis and growing to grow. I would really take passion and pride in the quality aspect over the commercialization aspect. There's always going to be the Budweiser, you know what I mean? And that's fine, because the price points are, appealing. But then again, not everyone, you know, everyone likes something of a little bit more craft quality in cannabis. And that's what we've always stuck by. It's just really good quality.
Yeah, Corey, I think you want to maybe jump in on there.
Oh yeah, no, I'm clapping, because Shane is a solid human being in the game, and I highly respect everything that he says, because he's absolutely on point. And I just wish there was more people like Shane kicking around to like really bang this industry to where it's supposed to be. So I really appreciate you taking the time today, Shane. It's good to see you, brother.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. You know, I'm not a know-it-all. I'm just super passionate and prideful about what I do and where this industry has come from when I first started. You know, going to work every day, I was wondering if I'm going to go to jail every day. And to get through that and finally be able to breathe and tell people the truth about what I do and it being looked at as an industry is a blessing. I embrace everyone that works their ass off to be in it because it's not an easy industry. A lot of people like to wake up saying, oh, I'm going to be in the cannabis industry, but there's so much grit that goes into it, you know, and for those that have actually made it to a sustainable point, you know, I take my hat off to you guys.
You know, absolutely. Thank you for bringing that one up. And maybe I can ask you on that front as well, because we're seeing so much development and, you know, as you've been progressing through this industry, what are the kind of, you know, we mentioned it a lot, ancillary services. Not everybody has to get into growing cannabis or weed now. Not everybody has to touch the plant. We leave it up to true OGs like you who've been doing it for so long and know what the fuck they're doing. But where can other people in this industry really come in and start to help and start to fuel and start to push the more kind of stuff on the side that needs to be there, the services that were missing for you at that time?
The thing that I'm seeing is with the industry opening up the way that it has, there's distribution companies that are capable of creating many, many brands, right? And then there is a ton of great farmers out there that are cultivating and producing really good cannabis. So what people need to understand is not every brand truly grows their own cannabis. They actually source it and they put it in jars. Well, when it hits market, you have a sales team that isn't that familiar with the product. It's just a product to them now. They just want to sell it. I would highly recommend really being in tune with it. So when you deliver as a brand, you actually have a soul behind it versus it just being a product, because it's more than just a product. It has medicinal purposes and so many other aspects to it. I don't want that to ever be overlooked. You know, it's just turned this commercialization. It's turning into like, oh, it's just some weed again, but it's evolving to so much more than that. So I just suggest people be in tune with what they're putting in the jar and be as passionate about it as you are selling it.
Yeah, for people starting in the industry, I really recommend being open-minded. There's some things that you're going to see in the large-scale facility that are not done in your tent at home, and there's a reason behind that. So I would really, you know, like to see everyone, you know, when they come in, just kind of be open-minded. Sometimes some of these things are going to hurt a little bit, but we're really trying to do as best as we can, you know, with the plan and with the circumstances that we're given. There's too much egos that are being swung on the production floors, and it's just been in too many facilities, seeing too many people, you know, wasting their time and energy, you know, swinging egos instead of training their employees on the facility floor and making sure that they actually love the plant just as much as those guys do instead of arguing about it. So that's one of the things that I'd really like to see is kind of that symbiosis, is those, you know, even at the same token in time, I know that there's some growers like Shane and myself that really are hesitant to new people coming on. And, you know, it goes both ways. Like, us older people should definitely be welcoming these folks with open arms. It's a brand new industry for people to have this experience, to be, you know, grounded with the plant like we are, like we've had the privilege to be. So I think that it's really important for, you know, us who have that experience to really be stewards of the plant and continue to be that instead of, you know, protecting and hiding our information. That's why I love to tell everybody everything that I know about cultivation, because I am so focused on learning the next and better thing that I'm ready for it. I just want you guys to know what's successful, or maybe it might not be successful. And that's, you know, I just would like to contribute to that and see more people contributing to that instead of, you know, standing at the top of the mountain and say, hey, look what I did. That doesn't really, you know, that doesn't resonate.
That's awesome you say that, Corey, because at the end of the day, we all want to raise each other's hands for the win. You know, it's too selfish to be lonely with all the success when you could share it with many other people. I think that's more important to all win in.
Corey, do you have one tip or tips to the listeners, to the people that's looking to get into the industry or looking to try to get or work their way to success in the industry? Do you have one tip for everyone that's listening?
Surprised if the starting pay is a little bit lower than you thought. Don't try and swing for the fences right away. Again, this is a new industry, and you'd be surprised, you know, if you just came in as a cultivation technician or somebody considered at the bottom of the umbrella or pyramid. I've seen people move up very quickly because their attitude's been in the right place. So if you're willing to, you know, have a reasonable expectation about what the legal market is paying for wages, and you're open to learning and, you know, loving the plant, I think you're going to do pretty well. Within there, it's probably my biggest tip. And judging by Shane's laughter, I'd love to hear his thoughts on that one.
I mean, it's just coming from the legacy market, I guess you could say, or traditional market. It is, the instant gratification isn't there when you get into the legal market, but a lot of the headaches go away. So the reward is definitely there. It's just stay in your lane, scale accordingly, because everyone likes to start, you know, at the finish line and not run the race, and or start at the starting line and not run the race and be at the finish right away, when there's so many things in between to learn from. And to scale accordingly without jumping the gun is definitely something to take in consideration, because there's a lot of hurdles that happen, and sometimes those demands or the false expectations could really backfire on you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something for everybody that's listening, and for everyone here as well to realize. It's definitely been, you know, continuous slaps in the face for me. It's success isn't overnight. Shit takes time, and you really just got to hunker down and focus on and do your thing. Yeah, I just started saying, find your passion. You know, it is a fact, you know, if it's something that you really truly love to do, and like Corey was saying, something you can surround yourself with and really take such an interest in, you know, you see people like yourselves that are in the industry for so long because you're doing what you love. And I think this is where, you know, people coming into the industry, like you said, we're really trying to not run the race and just be at the finish line. You know, I saw as well the other day, I think it was Forzana who posted that a new company was coming out, and it was a lady who was, although she was doing a completely woman managed company and team, had, you know, just openly stated, you know, I'm just coming into this industry, I'm just here for the money. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But then we really, really do miss that side and that support that we've seen, because we wouldn't be able to make these moves in the industry that we are making. We wouldn't be able to have the conversations today that we are having if it weren't for the work and just hard passion and time that was put in over the past 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And yeah, I really, really appreciate you guys sharing that. It's been it's an absolute blessing to be able to get that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've worked with a shit ton of like celebrities and rappers, musicians. Like we've done so many different aspects to this industry, and everyone that walks into it, they're like, oh, the money, the this, the that, and I'm like, go ahead and think that way and see what happens, because you have to have a real passion. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, you really have to work for it. And the money that people think is truly there, there's a lot of very hard work and many years that go into this before you're going to reap any benefits, just like anything else in life. This isn't like growing a bunch of pounds and moving them illegally and getting the instant gratification money. You actually have to build a business. So people need to keep that in mind.
You mentioned before, Shane, it's a good opportunity that we can operate inside of these spaces without looking for the choppers above us, right? Like, that's kind of the best benefit that I see with all of it, to be honest. It's a privilege in that sort of sense. But at the same point in time, you know, I just kind of wanted to mention and touch on what Liam was just saying there about, you know, it's the fight never ends, brother. Even like in a legal, federally legal market, like there's still shenanigans going on. And, you know, I speak that from personal experience, because I let my guard down a little bit thinking that, oh yeah, it's legal, everything's wonderful and things are getting better. Well, you know, there's tornadoes waiting on the horizon inside of this market. It always happens, unfortunately. So, you know, there's still to this day, there's banking hurdles with companies that want to operate in cannabis here. I actually have an appointment in 30 minutes with another bank to try and, you know, get through some of these hurdles again. But it's just, it's ridiculous in that way. So I feel that I'm fighting just as much as I did now, if not more, when we were still operating in the gray market up here in Canada, when we were really, you know, pushing the dispensaries and, you know, forcing the issue of access for patients here in the country. You know, that's the important part is, you know, a lot of people think that once it's legal, everything is wonderful. Well, that is absolutely just categorically false. There still are new challenges in markets that will federally legalize. That's 100% given.
Absolutely, Corey. The race to the bottom is a real thing, but if you know how to maneuver the right way, I think, you know, with realistic expectations and hard work, those are the companies that are going to survive.
No, absolutely, couldn't agree more. It's definitely a hard groundwork to be laying down. And Corey, I love the fact that you mentioned that as well. No bullshit, cutting straight to the point. The same shenanigans do happen in the legal market, in the legal industry. And if anything, I feel like it's almost a lot more protected. You can almost get away with a lot more things because you are pushing pens and papers. And not just having verbal agreements. A lot of stuff does happen. We've seen a lot of deals and a lot of, you know, quite big. I mean, you guys probably know about the whole acquisitions, the mergers, how much of it is controlled in the monopoly sense, how much of it is grown in certain places at certain margins. You know, a lot of the medical cannabis that people are smoking right now in Europe, it's not even worth more than maybe 30, 40 cents a gram. Yet they're selling it in Germany for about 26. So this, 26 euros, not 26 cents. So this is where, you know, these kind of problems that you mentioned, Corey, yeah, they definitely don't go away. If anything, maybe some of them are exacerbated. But how can you guys really see this coming about in terms of structuring that industry? I know, Corey, we had it last time as well when we spoke about Canada and what we can do for Europe. And in terms of Europe really just nailing the medical market first before countries really start to think recreational. But where do you guys really think this could go in terms of just setting up that structured market?
Different facilities in this game. The disgusting reality is that Canada doesn't have any medical cannabis. There's no diversion. There's no difference between medical cannabis and recreational cannabis. They're being produced in the same facilities. And as being a medical patient first, I think that's a colossal joke. I think that licenses should be separated. Some places should be recreational. Some places should be medical. So then that way these medical places can truly pursue, you know, what they want to do, which pretty much all of them just want to grow organically. Like, just leave them alone and let them do it. You know, the quality of the product is there. Let's work with testing and try and understand, you know, from a regulated environment, maybe some of the things they've been doing are incorrect. But at the same time, I mean, we all know where the quality is. You already mentioned Humboldt already, Liam. You know, that's really the, you know, that's, those are the people up there that instilled the passion for me. And so that's kind of the mentality, and the headbutting that I'm having up here in Canada is exactly that, is that mentality going up against them. So, yeah, I think it's really important to have that separation. So that way, when I go to this pharmacy now, that I don't see these, like, I know it's garbage product, just straight up, no BS. Like, I know it's garbage product. I know that product line was created at a facility who couldn't grow good stuff anymore. They had to create this brand because their THC marker wasn't hitting what was promised. So how the hell you can pass that off on medicine? Like, that's borderline a crime. Like, that's just absolutely ridiculous. I don't agree with it whatsoever. So I think that's one of the biggest things. So that the medical market and the recreational market don't just kind of swallow each other and become one as whole. I think that's something that should be looked at from the beginning, because I just don't understand how else the medical community is going to last. We've been swallowed up here and crushed in Canada, and it hurts.
See, out here in Los Angeles, the medical market, you're allowed to purchase up to like a half a pound of product, but recreational, you cannot. As far as cultivating, it's basically all the same. It's just what shop sells it as. Well, are you a medical shop? Are you medical and recreational? There's no specifics. I'm truly hoping that when it becomes a little bit more, when there's a little bit more medical study to it, that's like shown with terpene profiles and their true benefits and many others with the plant, then we could truly dissect its medical aspects and how, which plant or terpenes or characteristics provide what for certain people that are looking for those ailments in cannabis.
We just got up Jared here as well, who had his hand up with something to say. How's it going, Jared? What are you up to today, sir?
Just enjoying a beautiful day here in the coast. Just wanted to chime in. The regulators are not going to cannabis for in America, we regulated ourselves. We started doing all of our own testing. We didn't have to wait for the government to come in and say, let's figure out cannabis testing. The farmers went out and figured out how to do cannabis testing to self-regulate themselves so they could actually create a viable product. The same is going to hold true going into the future. If you want to differentiate yourself as a medical cannabis farmer versus a non-medical cannabis or recreational, then you just have to create your own SOPs and standards and hold true to it and market yourself as that so that people know that's what they're going to be getting. Because, you know, as we all know, just a label, an organic label or whatever certified label from the government, it's not going to really, you know, it may make some people feel good, but those of us who know, you know, those labels are just labels and they can get paid to be put on. So you really want to find out who your farmer is, what is the quality products that they're making. And then as an individual doing that, that helps the whole industry mature as a whole so that people really begin to understand why do these differentiations matter? Why? What is the difference between a medical cannabis farmer and a recreational farmer? The farmer needs to know that. So the farmer can tell the consumer, this is what I'm doing differently than those bozos that are just growing to make something poisonous to give to you because it's about money. You know, a regenerative cannabis farmer isn't necessarily focused on money as he is as much as providing a high quality product. You know, and if you're making a medical cannabis product for the medical community, well, guess what? The same thing. If you're making it for the medical cannabis community, it also works very well for the recreational community. So if we could just change everyone's mindset and say, we're just going to grow stuff that's healthy because we all want to consume things that are good for us, and to create a standard that's not necessarily good for us that allows us to consume things that are poisonous, well, that we should all be against that because that's not benefiting anyone in the industry at all. And when you start to co-concentrate, you know, resins and all these other oils out of this stuff, all you're doing is making a more concentrated poison. So if we could all agree that we need to approach this from a medical aspect because we're trying to produce medicine and we want to shine it in the best light that we can, then if we can get the medical cannabis industry ticking towards that, then it should be very easy to get our tomatoes and our carrots and our lettuce and all of our other food that we do to get our other farmers to do the same thing. Because if we're consuming things that we need for nourishment, that it's you know, we need cannabis in our diet as nourishment. You know, we need the cannabinoids, we need the phytocannabinoids, we need the riboflavins, we need the riboflavoflavins, we need all these things in us, otherwise we're going to become sick as a society, which we obviously are noticing now. If we remove vitamin C out of the society, everybody would have broken bones in a couple of years, and we'd be wondering why everybody's breaking bones. Well, it's the same thing. We removed cannabis and all these cannabinoids from our biosphere, basically from our gut biome, and now all of a sudden we're having all these issues popping up more and more. On top of that, we have all these different toxins that are putting into our environment, which are triggering our epigenetics, which causes us to express and degrade faster. So whoever said that it was a crime against humanity was right. I wasn't paying attention to who said that, but keeping the medical cannabis or hemp or cannabinoids and terpenes from us as a society is a crime against humanity, the largest one that I can think of. You know, when they went around and started banning it in the 60s, it was like, are you kidding me? Now we're subsidizing all these countries to ban it unanimously within like 10 years, the whole globe says cannabis is bad when we've been using it in every aspect of our life or since the beginning of time. Something's going on here. Anyway, I'll shut up. That was.
Thank you so much, Jared, for coming in and sharing with us. It's you're sitting on amazing knowledge, and thank you again for sharing. I learned a lot more there.
We had a medical system here in Canada that was originally set up, and we could only access our cannabis through the mail. And as citizens, we took it to the Supreme Court of Canada as a constitutional right against our freedoms that we could not access our medicine. And we won. So that's the thing, right? It's that access. I really appreciate you pointing that out, because that's kind of the same thing that I'm concerned about in some of these European countries, is like, if this was any other medicine for any other thing, like, just imagine the uproar. So I'm just curious to know that kind of I'd love to see that challenge kind of being brought up. And then just one other thing that you said, you know, you made a really good analogy about vitamin C. And, you know, unfortunately, vitamin THC hasn't been accepted yet as much as vitamin C. So once I think that becomes, you know, more common knowledge about what our endocannabinoid system and how vital that is to the rest of the systems in our body, you know, I'm hoping that that vitamin C analogy is going to be even, you know, harder hit when people understand what the heck we've been doing to ourselves for so long.
I have a quick question regarding the abundance. I'm not familiar with it, so if I say it's things that are not correct, please correct me on it. But the mass production in Canada and the how accessible it is over time, like, I don't even know how to say this right. Let me see here. So you guys have so much product, it sits, and there's no, like, date that it is not acceptable for the market, as to my understanding. Like, you guys can still put, like, your old product onto the market. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been into stores where there's products that are well over 1 year old from package date. They're still sitting on the shelf, and that's at a couple of different licensed producers as well. So, and I guess honestly, like, the more troubling thing is that our supply chain is not secure in relation to environment controls. So not every single distribution warehouse here in the country has environmentally controlled spaces. You know, I've made the analogy before, you know, even when we're buying a bag from one of our friends, we in the summertime, we don't even want to put it on our dash because of the heat. Like, obviously there's a bag of weed on your car, but you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't want it in the direct sunlight. So just imagine it sitting in these warehouses for, like you said, months at a time before they actually make it to shelf. It's an interesting situation we have here.
Not only is it interesting, but there's liability involved with it. Once you have products sitting on the shelf, they begin to decarboxylate depending on if they're too hot or too cold or whatever's going on. They're converting those compounds, which were something, now they're going into something else. And now, if that's acceptable or not, that's based on the laws wherever you're, you know, wherever you are. Here, if we have a 10% variant from what the test was when it went into the bottle, we have to take it off the shelf. And 10% can very easily happen by getting hot once and, you know, converting some of the compounds. And when you retest it, it's basically the same product, just a few compounds have converted. So we've had people have to take a bunch of stuff off the shelf because of that.
So that's our guideline here in Canada, as well as you're allowed up to a 10% variance. So essentially you could be, you know, buying something in the store that's 18%, and could be as low as 8% actually what's in the bottle for all intents and purposes in that analogy.
Hey guys, I'm just going to jump in real quick as well. And Jared, for everybody listening, maybe just give us a little quick breakdown of what you're doing with Lost Coast and where people can contact you, where they can find out more.
We are on LostCoastWellness.com. We just make medical products in the hemp world, in the hemp industry. And we also, you know, we started off in medical cannabis. We were number 81 to get the permit in Humboldt County to do medical cannabis. And then we saw that, you know, that market was getting hard to get the product to people. It was taking longer. And so we just decided to remove the THC, went national with our hemp company, and created all these zero THC products that we've had for years. We just basically took the THC out and put them through our national hemp program. And then, so we have product in the medical cannabis here in Humboldt, and then we also have product in the federally legal hemp market. But all of our products are designed to target specific illnesses or conditions. So, and we have 150 different products that we have. We launched with our first 13. You can check us out at LostCoastWellness.com. You can email me at Jared@LostCoastWellness.com. Yeah, well, whatever other questions y'all have, I don't know.
No worries.
I've been in the space for a minute.
No, I can absolutely tell, man. Thank you for sharing that as well. And I think because we touched on that with Corey and Shane as well, and maybe to ask you as well, you know,
what are the really kind of big mistakes that you've seen being made over the years? You know, I mean, you say you work now with also a lot of THC-free products on the federally legal hemp basis, which is awesome because, you know, just bringing hemp more out there is definitely something that's needed. But really, you know, what kind of mistakes have you really seen, and, you know, what can we look at avoiding over here in Europe from what you've experienced?
You start off with what you know. You make that product very good, and then you put it into the market and you grow it into the market. You don't necessarily have a plan of I'm going to go take over the market, or I'm going to be the best in the field, or I'm going to do the most sales. Or if you set yourself up like that, you're going to crumble. You have to come at it from the perspective of I have a quality product. I want to help someone, go and help someone with that quality product, and then help another person, and then help another person, and don't go borrowing a bunch of money to try to position yourself faster than someone else. If you want to be in the space, decide you're going to be in the space, decide that it's a noble reason, go after it because of that, and everything else will kind of support itself. I see companies go and borrow a bunch of money and go into marketing a particular product or a particular demographic. And if they don't get a return on that money fast enough, they have to go borrow more. And they have to come up with a no idea, which is already stressed out because the first idea didn't work. And then they have to borrow more money. And then all of a sudden they're chasing, you know, that return, that ROI. And then I see other people that just go get a bunch of, you know, borrow a bunch of money. And their model is to just continue globbing, you know, consuming things and hoping to be the last person standing at the end. You know, that works in a traditional, you know, capitalistic market, but this is not that. You have to work the business along with the culture of the industry. And if you're not working the culture with the business, you're going to get out of whack too much. You'll become too business and you won't be trusted. And if you work the culture too much, you'll be trusted, but you won't have any money to do what you want. So you have to work both sides simultaneously, and you don't make, you know, you let the culture grow a little bit, and then you push, let the business grow a little bit, then you jump back over to the culture. So it's this back and forth thing that you try to massage as you grow. And doing that is an organic way, in my opinion, to grow so that people really begin to understand the product. You begin to make money based on, you know, your needs, and you're not going to, front load your business with a bunch of things that you don't necessarily need. Then you realize that later on that you don't need it, but you still have to pay it back. And so this industry is going to be here forever. You don't need to take it over tomorrow. I would say just get in it, learn what you're really good at, focus on that, and then focus on helping people. And that's what this industry is about, helping people. It's not about making money. It's not about CBDs and these medical cannabis is about sharing medicine and helping people. And if you can do that, you do that properly, everything else will support you. You know, you may not be rich overnight, but you're going to be in the game in 10 years. And if you're in the game in 10 years, you're going to be doing okay. And if you're still struggling in 10 years, get out of the game because this is not your industry. So.
Hey, Jared. Thank you so, so much for that. I think it's a really, really nice point to just kind of end the podcast recording session on there as well and say a big, big, big thank you to everyone that came in today, for David, Dale, Forzana, Corey, Nicole, Finn, Shane, and of course yourself, Jared, as well. It's really, really been, so much knowledge and so many tips and so much advice as well for people on, you know, the mistakes that have been made, what to look out for. We've had such a cool conversation, such amazing topics covered on the medical cannabis side, really drawing some parallels as well with Forzana and Corey between the different markets. And I think all in all, it's really been a great, great discussion for the third episode of the Cannabis Maker podcast. I really, really appreciate you guys all being with us this evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the invite, Liam.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all, guys. David, sir.
Take care, guys.
For the next 7 days, we will be doing the Cannabis Maker podcast every single day and really keep it going and share some more industry insights and let people know what's going on in the space.
Thank you so much again, everyone. Really, really appreciate all the knowledge you're coming in with, and all the years more in the industry. Shane, Jared, I assume Corey has a lot of more years than me in the industry, so I really, really appreciate you guys coming in and sharing. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
The Cannabis Maker Podcast is hosted by Nordic Herb Zone and WeCan. Nordic Herb Zone is Norway's first cannabis and hemp brand and makes the world's best organic hemp rolling papers. Get in touch with us today to discuss wholesale and distribution options for the world's best organic hemp papers with the slowest burn and the smoothest taste. NordicHerbZone.com. WeCan is one of the UK's leading providers of digital services, development, business, and marketing tools for your cannabis business. It includes digital marketing, SEO, web design, e-commerce development, web hosting, digital marketing, branding, advertisement, wholesale and distribution, and consultancy and business development. Head to WeCan.uk today to find out more.